Hey, everybody. It's This Week in Tech. We have an amazing panel this week talking about the implosion at Reddit, iTunes, and more NSA madness. Stick with us.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 517, recorded on Sunday, July 5th, 2015. The Pharaoh has spoken.
This Week in Tech is brought to you by Wealthfront. Wealthfront is a low-cost, automated investment service that's the most sophisticated way for you to invest your money. Whether you've got millions or you're just starting out, visit Wealthfront.com/twit to sign up and get your free personalized investment portfolio. That's Wealthfront.com/twit. And by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting Casper.com/twit and entering the promo code twit. And by Squarespace. Squarespace is the best way to create a beautiful website or online store. Enter the offer code TWIT and get 10% off right now. Squarespace. Build it beautiful. And by Prosper. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace that connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Visit Prosper.com/TWIT and receive a $50 Visa gift card when you get a loan.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to This Week in Tech. I am hosting for Leo Laporte, who is getting some great rest, well-deserved, and I've got an incredible show for you today. Great guests. To my right, the one, the only, Peter Rojas, who, of course, was the founder of Gizmodo, Engadget, Gadget, and has now moved out to San Francisco. We don't know why. Welcome back to the program.
Thanks. It's good to be back.
What's going on? You were at AOL, last I understand.
I'm still at AOL. I'm running.
But you've moved to San Francisco.
Moved to San Francisco, and I'm just in, still there. And,
just figuring out what I might do next. Okay, fair enough. We'll leave that cliffhanger. Also, Christina Warren, another Weblogs Inc. alumni.
You
worked on which sites? Twa?
Twa and Download Squad, and then later on Stylist.
Stylist.
Yeah.
It's like all these names coming back. All the names that AOL has now destroyed and killed. All of these have been unplugged. And what are you doing now, Christina? I mean, obviously, you're a film girl on Twitter. We know that.
Yeah. I'm senior tech correspondent at Mashable, where I've been for, almost 6 years.
Incredible. So, and Mashable is huge.
Yeah.
Tens of millions now, uniques?
Like 40-something.
Incredible.
When I joined, there were 9 people total in the company, and now I think there are like 203 of us.
203. Huge.
Yeah.
Also on the Skype, Owen Stone is with us, also known as Odakta. Welcome back to the program.
Uncle Jason, I don't know who let you run the ship, but obviously the inmates are running the house today.
Yes.
So we're going to see what happens.
The inmates are running the asylum, and you're wearing your headphones that make you look like the guy from The Empire Strikes Back who worked for Lando Calrissian.
What was that guy's name?
You know the guy I'm talking about? He worked for Lando Calrissian, had the big white ears. He'd talk to him. All right, listen. It's been a crazy weekend. Things are going nuts on the interwebs about Reddit. I don't know if everybody's following this story. I'm assuming people are.
Yeah, they're melting down.
It is a complete and utter meltdown. They fired the woman who was running AMAs.
Victoria.
Yeah.
Victoria.
She was incredibly well-loved by the admins, the community managers, who were running all the subreddits.
Yeah.
They fired her. The people who run the subreddits, as I understand it, decided they would shut down in protest all the subreddits yesterday.
Yeah, there was something like 130 or so that it got shut down, I think, over the course of the past few days.
Which is the equivalent of a factory shutdown.
It's like it's a strike.
It's literally the site went on strike. So. And then I go to the homepage, and the homepage is literally, I don't know if there's 15 stories on the Reddit homepage, but 14 of them are brutally attacking Ellen Pao, the CEO, interim CEO, key point, And some of them pretty horrible, misogynistic, racist, horrible stuff. But let's just call it what it is. The whole place is melting down. Peter, what are your thoughts on this and why it's happened?
Well, it's I mean, I think that there has been a lot of frustration on the part of the mods. And people, I mean, I think people who are familiar with Reddit understand that the mods are basically unpaid volunteers who do a lot of administrative and work and heavy lifting for the site. And so they organize each of these individual channels. They keep them clean. They moderate them, remove spam, and do a lot of stuff that, you know, you couldn't operate Reddit if you had to pay this army of people to do all this work. And so a lot of them have been frustrated with the way that Reddit has been run. There's been a lot of there's been a lack of communication, I think, from the executive team there, from the management team at Reddit to these mods. And I think what happened was when they brought in Victoria, I think, which was a couple of years ago, it was actually to help, you know, facilitate better communication from the management to the mods of the subreddits and really help improve the experience for them.
And that seems to have worked because people actually loved her.
People were happy. Yeah. The AMAs were – because what happened was these AMAs were blowing up. And,
the Ask Me Anything feature.
Yeah, and it was becoming kind of like a Wild West where you know, celebrities were being impersonated and
they needed to have some control.
They needed to have a little bit more control, and so they brought in Victoria to help organize that. And I think getting rid of her and not communicating why, we still don't know why she left, why she was removed,
right,
as far as I know.
The rumors, I guess, people are going a little bit wild speculating that they were trying to commercialize the AMAs. They obviously came out with an AMA app at some point. And that maybe she was filibustering the commercialization of it. Christina or Odakta, what are either of your takes on this? And why was she fired? Does anybody know yet?
I don't know. So disclosure, I know Victoria. I knew her before she joined Reddit when she was at ID, which is the big talent agency. And she actually did a lot of AMAs on behalf of clients at ID. And I think that's how she met the Reddit people. I saw her on Monday. You know, when she was still at Reddit, she came into our office to give a presentation on Reddit. You know, I haven't talked to her, but I other to express my support and tell her, you know, that I'm rooting for her and whatnot. But no, I mean, you know, like Peter said, the community loved her. She was truly like somebody who it wasn't just a job. Like she was a legit like got the community spirit. Like
idea this was coming. It wasn't like there was no indication when you saw her on Monday that something was amiss.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
And she's been working there for 2 years, Christina?
Yeah, to that 2 years.
What percentage of the site would you estimate she actually runs and is responsible for, if we were to think about it? Because you have this management team that's keeping the servers up and maybe trying to make an ad business on top of Reddit. But then there's the community side. Is there like a whole community team at Reddit that's taking care of the community, or was she running all the mods and then the mods were taking care of the site?
She was basically in charge of the AMA section, the IAMA section. She was kind of the liaison between the community and some of the admins. And so if you look at Reddit and you look at like what the part is that gets the most public press, that's positive, that's not, you know, about the terrible, you know, misogynistic, awful, like hatred, you know, like, you know, the fappening type of stuff, like the stuff that makes us embarrassed to be, you know, denizens of the internet, the good stuff from Reddit usually comes from the AMAs. And that was all stuff that she helped coordinate. So she would usually, not always, but oftentimes, you know, sit side by side with a lot of the celebrities and type their answers, you know, because she can type really fast. You know, she would do a lot to verify, to get with their management, to get with whoever was you know, doing the AMA to verify them to the community. She would take back, kind of act as a liaison between, you know, the moderators and the regular, you know, and the staff at Reddit. You know, she was one of the few people still in New York, but from what I understand, it didn't seem like, you know, that was going to have to change. I don't think it was the moving to New York or moving to San Francisco part that had anything to do with it. I think that core thread, that seems the most likely to me. I can't really, it seemed to totally take her by surprise. And when I saw her on Monday, you know, there was absolutely no indication that anything was happening. So, I mean, she was in our office on behalf of Reddit. So it was a total shock, I think, to kind of all of us. But she, one thing I would like to stress about her is that she's like a legit person, like who got the community. You know, there's some people who act in kind of community manager roles and kind of liaison roles between users and community people and, you know, the staff from social networks who kind of don't get the ecosystem. She legit got it and was, you know, somebody who used Reddit before she joined and got it and was part of kind of, that's why she was so loved, because she could speak their language.
She actually did the work to get to know the community. Which,
completely.
You know, it's very hard to build a community at this scale, and it's very easy to break it. obviously, as we've seen. Oh, Doctor, what's your take on all this?
Just in general, pure speculation. It just seems so out of the blue that someone went into a meeting and was trying to tell her something, and she was trying to explain how it actually works, and somebody had a knee-jerk reaction. Well, if you're not on board, then you're out. Mm. Because how can you just annex someone that is so beloved and so ingrained in your system out of the blue like that, and then not have any kind of response, no kind of gesture, no, oh, peaceful parting ways. Like, don't you know somebody in PR or anything? Like, you just set a wave on a small island and you just let everything get wiped out. You don't send any kind of recovery, no water, no nothing. You just let it all wipe away.
So it's just completely quiet. So this
somebody made a childish move. I mean,
this is a very good point, which is the Reddit failure of management.
Yeah, they should have been ahead of this. I mean, you should understand that you can't make a change like that. You can't change a public-facing part of your business like that without having a plan for how you communicate that to the community.
Right.
I mean, it just doesn't make any sense at all.
Okay, so I want to ask the question that's not very politically correct, I don't think, and it's pretty controversial, which is, why is Ellen Powell running this site? She's never been CEO of a company, I think, at this point. This is her first job as CEO. And if you were going to think about who the worst person you could match with this community would be, I think you would be hard-pressed to find another executive in Silicon Valley who would be the antithesis of what this community would want in a leader. She's quiet. She's, I guess, in the bucket that most people would say social justice warrior. And then you have this other contingent that's incredibly loud on Reddit, which is provocative, pushing the line of free speech, pushing the lines of offensiveness. How much of this is Ellen Powell's fault because she's not qualified? How much of it is she's getting beat up and she shouldn't be beat up? I mean, this is the topic, I think, that is the key here. Is the community ever going to accept Ellen Powell?
Well, I think
in general, before somebody smarter says something for me, the things you said, the contrast is also a business decision. You can't say you have a group of animals and you're going to let another animal run that business. You would want someone structured and someone a little bit removed from that environment to try and get it stable and have some kind of structure to it. That's the only thing I could say in her defense to what you just asked the question.
Well, yeah, and I'm not. What I'm trying to get at is she the right person for the job?
I think very few people are the right person
for that job.
For that job. So I don't think it's necessarily a failing of Ellen Powell.
Right.
It's just that I think very few people have that innate understanding of communities, and that's why most communities like this that grow and it tends to be the founder who has been there since day one, who has nurtured it and stuck with the community and kind of knows it in and out, who usually is able to get it through times like this. And I know Alexis, who's one of the co-founders and he's a pretty good guy.
And he's working there now.
Yeah. And he's back there now. I know that he did kind of piss some people off with some of his kind of flippant comments, but it does seem like he's trying to, you know, take the trust that the community has in him as the founder and somebody who's been there since the beginning to kind of help them get through this. I will say, you know, I think that the fact that there is, there is a misogyny problem on Reddit.
For sure.
Amongst other problems.
Well, I mean,
so I think having someone who is outspoken as a feminist may be a good thing for a community like that. But, you know, I think that there are very, very, very few people, like I said earlier, who have the qualities to be able to manage a community of this size that is very unruly, and that it's not just they don't just want one thing. It's a lot of different things and different communities that all may want different things, and to kind of make all those people happy is very, 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 very hard.
Christina, what are your thoughts on Ellen Powell and the job she's done as the interim CEO of Reddit?
Yeah. You know, I mean, honestly, I mean, I think the Reddit's whole kind of management structure has been kind of, you know, a cluster for quite some time. I mean, I don't think Yashan did a great job. And I think that when things started to kind of get really, you know, publicly look really bad, I think that his response was bad. I don't think that her status as an investor, I don't think necessarily qualifies or unqualifies her. I don't know how good of a cultural fit she is with Reddit. I don't get the sense that she's really somebody who's part of the community. I don't think that her being a woman or being, you know, Ellen Powell, again, disqualifies her. What I will say is I was bothered by kind of an interview she gave to Mike Isaac of the New York Times when this happened, where she kind of was kind of flippant and said, you know, the majority of the community doesn't care about these blacked out subreddits. They don't care about Victoria. And saying that, I mean, she should have just kept her mouth shut and not said anything about Victoria at all. Just, you know, stayed out of it and just said, we're trying to, you know, respond to the community and you know, do what we can to get things running again, rather than being so flip about, oh, well, you know, the vast majority of the people who come to the site don't care about this. Because to me, that just is completely, proving that she's not connected to the community, which to me just kind of leads me to think she's not a great cultural fit.
Yeah, that's what the sense I get is she does not have any interest in being part of that community. It's a job to manage it, but if you're not in that community,
you kind of have to be participating.
You have to be a participant.
Well, it's just
right?
In the same way that if you want to be the CEO of Twitter, you probably should be active on Twitter.
Right.
If you want to run Gmail, it'd be good if you use Gmail. Right.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, we've seen communities revolt before. I mean, we saw Dig, right? The Dig community revolted.
Yeah.
And that was 6-7 years ago.
I mean, it was really the reason I think Reddit made it to the next level.
Yeah,
right? It went away. Everybody went to Reddit.
Yeah.
It is.
And it's, you know, and it's funny to see that there are a few kind of Reddit clones that are, I think, trying to
vote,
I think, is one of them.
Take advantage of the situation.
But was it you that said, should something like Reddit even be a for-profit centralized enterprise? Maybe it should be like a decentralized protocol that just organizes communities and people.
Well, I mean, it is. It does seem to me that the game of Reddit is to see how far you can push the envelope and how non-corporate you can be. And I think Steve Huffman and Alexis both understood that.
Yeah.
And they kind of let the community push the boundaries and said, yeah, we understand that this last 5% over here, the majority of us don't like, but it is free speech.
Yeah.
And so if you want to talk about dead babies, it's pretty horrific, but comedians make jokes about those things, and ambulance, you know, people, you know, have to deal with babies dying, and there's a place in the world for people to talk about this horrific subject. But they just recently went, I don't know, a month ago, and started getting rid of certain subreddits that had to do with hate.
Yeah, they banned a few.
Like, I hate fat people.
Yeah.
Again, and I'm a fat person, and I got a problem with that. I mean, at the end of the day, everybody lately just needs to, like, take a breath and make fun of their mom or something, because everybody is so insane about, this offends me, that offends me. Like, everything's offensive to somebody. But, again, we live in a country where you're allowed to say things. You know, and my personal response to that is, like, all this the hate against gay marriage and all that stuff. I'm like, look, don't quiet those voices. I want to see the snakes in my grass. If you quiet up all these people and push them in the closet, you just let the gay people out of, they're like roaches. They're going to be all in the infrastructure of my house, and I'm not going to see them coming when everything falls apart.
You'd rather shine light on them.
Yes. Say what
know
you
where they
say.
Are.
Yes. And if you don't like what somebody's saying, there's all kinds of buttons to mute, to not see, to hide, to whatever you want to do. As long as they're not talking about physically coming to someone's house and hurting someone, you should be able to say whatever you want to say. And yeah, deleting something and deleting the core of your business is a slippery slope, because when do you stop? Because everything's offensive to somebody. But I don't like skinny people.
Where do we stop? That's a question.
I mean, I think that there's also, though, that, you know, when, you know, you build a community like this, and I'm someone who's built communities in the past.
Yes.
Is that if you let them become overrun with spam or abusiveness or a corrosive kind of dialogue,
right,
it drives out people that have insightful, useful contributions to make.
Right.
And I think the thing about Reddit is, and they've done a great job of, I guess, up until this point, being a place where, yeah, in the margins, there's some terrible stuff.
Right.
But a lot of really great things get generated every day. And there's a lot of very thoughtful people that contribute either links or comments or whatever, you know, to that platform, to that site. And I think that, you know, if you don't have some level, you have to draw a line somewhere. And I think it's, I think you want to, you know, be as open to free speech, and being open to free speech means being open to offensive speech. But you also want it to be a place that just becomes a haven for, you know, bullying or, I mean, Twitter's facing this problem. Facebook has faced this problem.
Christina, what are your thoughts on the fringe of Reddit? How would you handle it? How has the current management team, Ellen Pao, handled it? Have they handled it well? How much of the issue do you think is just a mismatch of Ellen Pao to this community? And can you actually put rails on a community like Reddit without destroying it? I mean, that's, I think, the key here.
Yeah.
Can we put rails on Reddit, Christina?
No, I don't know if we can. I mean, I think that the doc actually kind of mentioned something interesting. He said something about, you know, when you have kind of a business of doing stuff. I think that what has made Reddit, what the reason that all these problems are happening is that it started out as this site, you know, that was gaining kind of a following and that Condé paid, what, like $15 million for or something. And they were kind of maintaining on a shoestring budget, and then that got bigger and bigger and bigger. And all of a sudden it started getting real traffic, becoming one of the most visited sites in the world, becoming a real place where you could conceivably make real money off of it. And at that point, all of a sudden everybody starts paying attention, and they start taking external financing, and in advance starts realizing, hey, this thing that we bought and kind of ignored could have the potential to be a real cash cow because it's getting so much real traffic. And so when it becomes a business, the paradigm changes, right? So you could, before, when it's just kind of, you know, c'est la vie, you can talk about it being kind of a free speech haven place, both for good and for ill. And I'm personally a believer in free speech, even when that means, and especially when it means, you know, awful speech. You know, that's the stuff you need to protect the most. But at the same time, there's a way to balance, I think, speech and also making a community that people actually want to be a part of. I think the challenge with Reddit is taking what had been a pretty freewheeling community, and one that we see in this instance where literally the users have been able to kind of shut the site down because they're able to take it private, whereas the people who run the site, who own the site, the actual employees, can't do anything to get it up again. When that can happen, I think that kind of shows how ill-prepared this company is for dealing with the realities of having this really kind of weird fringe community that is also happens to be a huge hub of traffic. And so they want to profit off of it, but they don't really know how to harness in the community that is built up around it, primarily because it was kind of where anything could go. I don't have the answer to that, but I don't think what they're doing is the right way to do it, especially with the messaging. I think that it'd be one thing if they said, look, we're not banning you from talking about these topics. The reason we ban these communities is because the people in them started to harass individuals and go after them in their real life. Mm. And that becomes a problem. And that's why they're shutting them down. I think if you explain things that way, rather than kind of, oh, we've got this anti-harassment policy and this other stuff, that's when people start to go, wait a minute. It's great for everybody to be nice to one another, but this is the internet and this is Reddit. And part of the deal is that people say, you know, terrible, hateful things. And this is the same company that a couple of years ago was defending, you know, some of the upshot, you know, communities and saying, we're not going to delete this stuff. And because it's not illegal, even though it's distasteful. Okay. So I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. It's complicated, obviously. When we get back, I want to talk about, if you think, I'm going to ask each of our panelists if Ellen Pao is going to make it out of the summer as the CEO of Reddit or not, the line between free speech and hate speech, and then are you going to pay for iTunes, radio, music or not, yes or no, when we get back after these messages about an amazing company which I use all the time called Wealthfront. I'm also an investor. Let's hand it off to Leo for the commercial.
We'll get back to This Week in Tech in a bit. I have returned to speak to you about this is the first time we've ever had a sponsor that I'm not allowed to use the product, thanks to SEC regulations. I'm talking about Wealthfront. This is a really interesting, especially for us geeks, way to invest your money using really well-proven and philosophies that I actually have known about for more than 10 years and believe in. But they do it automatically. It's automated with software, and it's really clever. Well, I want you to hear about this. Wealthfront, WealthFront.com. Wealthfront.com. And if you go to wealthfront.com/twit, we've got a special deal. I'll explain that in a second. So, you know, normally when you're investing, you get an investment advisor, and they're going to charge you a fee, and that fee could be 1%. I think my mom's investment advisor, she was giving her a good deal, 1%. But it could be 2%. What are you paying if you have an investment advisor? 3%. It could be very expensive. And that's not including any transaction fees, you know, changes, things like that. It can really add up and eat away at your investment. Wealthfront is going to give anyone who wants it, access to world-class long-term investment manager. Now, this is not for – in fact, I know some of you are like day traders. You do investing for fun. It's like a game for you. That's not what this is. This is long-term growth of your nest egg, whether you're saving for retirement or, you know, maybe I want to save for a boat so I could sail away, save for a house. This is what this is for, long-term investments. And they do so many very clever things. Now, you can, if you go to Wealthfront.com, you can actually get started at no cost and just see what their portfolio would be for you. So that's very helpful to get an idea of what they're talking about. And that you can do right now at Wealthfront.com/twit. This is commission-free. And let me tell you, it's done in software. Very clever idea. They're using investment strategies that have been around for a long time. Investment strategies I've used, but because the software is monitoring it, even interday, all the time, they can do things like maximize your tax savings. They do something that's interday trading called tax loss harvesting, direct indexing. Even if you're somebody who's trading actively for your own account, just for fun or for profit, this is a great solution to put your money away, not worry about it. It's automatically managed at a very low cost, 25 basis points. That's right, 25 basis points. That's 0.25% a year. Remember I said these other guys charging 1-3%? This is 0.25% per year, and there are no commissions, no hidden fees, no additional charges for any of the services you get from Wealthfront. This is really smart. This was created by some really smart guys who said, you know, you can do this strategy very effectively using software and produce very reliable results, do the tax loss harvesting, which is kind of hard to do unless you're using software, and really benefit people by a huge amount. It's no surprise they are now managing $2.4 billion in client assets. That's grown over 20 times in the last 2 years. They're just exploding right now. And because of SEC rules, it turns out if you're doing this, you can't use client testimonials in your ads. I can't sign up. It's killing me. But you can. For compliance purposes, I have to tell you, Wealthfront Incorporated is an SEC-registered investment advisor. Brokerage services are offered through Wealthfront Brokerage Corporation, member FINRA and SIPC. This is not a solicitation to buy or sell securities. Investing in securities involves risks, and there is the possibility of losing money. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Please visit Wealthfront.com to read their full disclosure. Wealthfront. Start investing your money the right way today. Visit Wealthfront.com/twit. At least find out about it. I'm telling you, this is really cool. Get your free personalized investment portfolio. You'll see the customized allocation they recommend for your profile. And just for Twit listeners, if you sign up to invest right now, your first $15,000 are managed free of charge forever. So I wish I can't do this. This is killing me. I would put in 15 grand right now. Just check it out and just see what they can do for you. Claim your offer today. Wealthfront.com/twit. If you could put in 15, I would. That really is going to make a difference. Wealthfront.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support of Twit.
All right, let's hear it for Wealthfront, another great product that I was able to invest in. Awesome. great ad. All right, when we left, Christina, you're making some very good points about, and I think we all believe in free speech, even if we don't like it, even if it's disgusting, even if we hate it.
Well, but there's a difference between, I mean, Reddit, no business is obligated to give anyone
that's
a platform
true.
To say
sure.
anything. So
right. So if they hate fat people, that's subreddit. They're not obligated to maintain it. But is there a way to maintain Reddit and not allow that at this point? It's
that's what
possible.
Reddit is. You can't stop doing what is your business model.
Right.
You can't McDonald's turn into Chick-fil-A overnight because right. they sell burgers. Like, and it just irks me so bad. You shouldn't be allowed to talk about killing people or threatening someone's life or showing up at their home. Everything else, as far as Reddit's concerned,
yes.
whether it's drunk babies or kicking dogs down the street, that's what floats your boat. The problem is they don't understand what their business actually is, so they have no clue how to monetize it or how to wrangle it or control it because they really don't understand what it is. You can't silence something that makes you money. You tell right. everybody to shut up. Where's the money coming from that you don't even know how to make yet?
And then is Reddit making money now?
Very little.
They're making very little from what I understand.
Given the scale of the site, they make relatively little money.
They've got over 100 million uniques or something.
I think it's like, in the mid-100.
Yeah, 150 like, or
150
something.
150
or 140. Well, here's one of the things. I'll give some inside information. I've been getting pinged by a lot of employees who have left because they think that some of the projects I'm working on might be good places to land. They're telling me that nobody will go work there. That they've set all the salaries at like the same rate, so you can't negotiate your salary.
Yeah.
So great people who want to go there, who make slightly more than whatever they set the specific salary at, are disqualified.
That was Ellen's policy, I remember.
Which is the stupidest policy I've ever heard. I mean, this has there ever been a stupider policy than no negotiations or salary? I mean, I don't want to make this, because people are going to be thinking I'm beating up on Ellen Powell, but she is a first-time CEO, and this is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Christina, what do you think of this? At Mashable, are people allowed to negotiate their salaries, or is it not allowed?
Yeah. No, people are definitely allowed. I've definitely negotiated mine. No, I mean, I think...
But you're a woman. I thought you were incapable of negotiating your salary.
Right. Yeah, no.
No, seriously, that's Ellen Powell's position, is that women don't negotiate as well.
Well, no.
Therefore, we should take away the negotiation of salaries. It sounds completely stupid to
me. Which sort of bothered me. I understand sort of where she's coming from, saying that women historically are less comfortable negotiating their salaries. And so to make, I guess, the playing field more even, there's just no negotiation. Instead, I think the better response is let's teach women how to negotiate their salaries. I'll help. Right. If you're a woman and you need help, like you need advice, like how to negotiate your salary, like call me, like Film Girl, like right. Call me out on Twitter. I've helped plenty of younger colleagues, men and women, but especially women with that. So yeah, I mean, I think the real thing is like teach women how to negotiate. Don't get rid of negotiating, period, because like you said, you end up getting ruling out a ton of people who would be great in the job, and then you end up making, you know, it's an unpleasant experience if you're coming into a new job and you don't have any room to negotiate. It's like, okay, so I'm going to take a pay cut, or I mean, it's ridiculous.
And let's just end this by just, is she going to make it out of the, let's just say the year?
Yeah.
Will Ellen Powell be the CEO come January 1st, 2016? Oh, doctor? Yes or no?
I don't think so.
That's a no. Christina, will Ellen Powell be the CEO? No, definitely not.
Yeah.
Peter?
Well, she's interim CEO now.
Right.
So it actually will be relatively easy for the board at Reddit to bring in a full-time CEO and say, we've ended our search and we found a full-time permanent CEO.
Right.
So I think that she will – I'd be surprised if they offered her – the opportunity to transition to being a permanent CEO.
And the correct answer is she will not make it out of the year. I cannot tell you exactly how I know this, but I am certain of it. Let's move over to and just, you know, I think as much as the board is going to not allow her to, and this gets into sort of corporate governance, not allow her to continue, was this a bad decision to put her in charge of this to begin with, Peter? Like, I start to wonder, like, first-time CEO, and you said before this is the hardest job you can imagine. And what's the harder job than this, BlackBerry or AOL? Or Reddit? Which company would be the hardest one to run for you, Peter? Which one would you, in order, would you take those jobs?
I would actually take the BlackBerry job first.
I would too, okay. Which one would you take second, AOL 5 years ago, AOL or Reddit? Which one would be next?
Oh, man, I would have screwed up AOL really badly. But,
okay.
Sounds like
Reddit.
Yeah, so maybe Reddit and then AOL. So.
Right. Interesting. Well, okay, so let's go on to the iTunes Music Radio with the new release of 8.4. Obviously, Beats 1. They've got the new app.
Apple Music, yeah.
Apple Music. And here's the thing I'm kind of embarrassed about. It took me no less than 3 or 4 minutes to find it. I was like, where is it?
Yeah.
I downloaded the new updates. I get on my desktop, and they're telling me, oh, my God, you have it. Where is it? And how do you find it?
Yeah.
Am I the only person who had this experience of feeling really stupid that I was looking for the Apple Radio icon on my desktop?
Yeah.
And searching in iTunes trying to find it? How long did it take you to find it, Peter?
Well, the funny thing is I actually I looked for it in the App Store. Because I thought, like,
Apple Radio.
Yeah, Apple Music.
And Apple Music.
I was like, I need to install this. And, of course, that was not the right thing.
Not the right answer.
Yeah.
You have to go to your music app.
Yep.
Which is your iTunes app, and then you find it there.
Yes.
What was
There's a separate iTunes app. iTunes is still where you buy
it's a separate iTunes. There's a music app and there's an iTunes app. So those are two separate things.
Right.
But
so what's the difference, Christina, between the iTunes app?
I thought that actually they would do a separate...
A third, because there's the podcasting app too, which is awesome.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes. So yes, you've got three.
I don't think Apple cares about how many apps they force on us. So
where is it, Christine? Where can people find it? And how long did it take you to find it?
Okay, so disclosure: Apple showed it to me on Monday.
Right.
So they walked me through it.
Right. They showed you where to find it.
Yeah, they showed me where to find it. They showed me the new white icon, which I hate. No, I mean, it's the old music icon. It used to be orangish, and now it's white. And there's the iTunes Store, which still is where you buy your stuff and download your tracks. But that's different from all of your music is and where your radio stuff is. That's all in one app. And then your podcast is still a separate app, too. But on the desktop, it's still one app, iTunes, which is a bloated mess.
Yeah. Even and more, but they've crammed even more into iTunes on the desktop, which is
so
amazing to me.
I am so confused by it. But I did like it because the Beats One radio station was actually pretty cool. Like, they had some good programming.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're being adventurous in the programming.
Yeah.
Though I have to say, I was listening for about 35 seconds before they played that for a new Pharrell song, which I think they're contractually obliged to play.
Oh, really?
Have you noticed this?
I was reading it all the time.
They're contractually obliged to play it all the
Not
time.
Not the happy song, but
no, the new one.
Oh, he's got a new summer ballad. Yeah. I'm not aware of
it. It's like they did some deal where it was like he gave it to them exclusive, and then they had to play it all the time.
Okay, Doctor, what do you think of it?
I haven't heard it one time. Just let me rant real quick because
okay, good. Rant away. That's why
you're
here.
First of all, the radio, Beats One Radio, is really awesome. It's like 1,000 times better than paying for Pandora. The selection, the fact that they bring in all kinds of crazy music. They've got me to buy 4 songs. I haven't bought music from iTunes in like 3 years, but they got me to buy like 4 singles because they just put this crazy stuff like on my playlist. That's awesome. The quality, though, is about 50% the quality streaming that Pandora is. And how do I know this? Because I have a concert in my car. I have 3,000 watts in my car, and I'll be bumping. And when I listen to Pandora, I can't sit in my seat. My back hurts. I'm listening to this, and I'm trying to blow out the button, turn up the volume, because it's just not really good quality. Then on top of the fact that you put all this junk in my face, and you hit away my 400 gigs of music. I got like 30,000 albums. I got so much music. And all my music's over here on this one little tab. And once I get there, I got to flip through the 4 things you want to select at the top before I can get the scroll. Oh, and then you're going to get my little place on top here. But you got this new crap, which I don't care about. You got the heart, which, again, I don't care about because I'm...
What is the heart? One. The heart is what they think you'll like? What you heard?
They're good.
Yeah, that's the music. That's Apple Music, which when I use that, I'd rather stick to Spotify over this. I don't really know what this is. Beats One, the music selection, the stuff that comes up, they nailed that.
Yeah.
All the rest of this crap could be set on fire right now.
You can get Beats One for free. You don't have to pay for Beats One.
Ah,
no. You can get that without paying the $10 a month for Apple Music.
Yeah.
And so right when you pay the $10 a month, you're paying for, to be clear, not just a Pandora-like experience of fast-forwarding, but you can play entire albums if... I was listening.
It's like Spotify.
Yeah,
it's you have on-demand access to whatever. Everything. Like the, I don't know how big the cat. Christina, do you know how large the library is?
30 million.
30 million.
So, is the library any different between Spotify and?
Yes, there are some differences, but it's very, very similar.
So on the fringe.
I mean, the fringe stuff is where you like. For instance, I'm a nerd and I like collegiate a cappella. There's more of that stuff on Spotify than on Beats.
What did she just say? She said a cappella something. What?
Yeah, I did. I said collegiate a cappella because
not just regular a cappella, but collegiate.
Collegiate a cappella.
I know what a cappella is. What is collegiate?
Acapella. It's like college groups.
Okay, but not graduate acapella. School, or does it include graduate?
Not high school.
It can, yeah. No, it no, 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 high school. You can include high school, I guess, and most of them.
The high school kids, they're not at the they're not at the level of
exactly.
We're cutting through it right now.
We're talking the Pitch Perfect type of stuff.
They're talking about Glee. I got you.
Yeah, kind of. That's fine. I have good taste in music too, but there's some of the rarer stuff. I guess a lot of EDM stuff and certain indie stuff and certain like Euro stuff is on Spotify more. There's some more mainstream stuff on Apple Music. We did find out in our testing, weirdly, Ace of Base. Remember Ace of Base?
Yes, of course. Yeah. Ace of Base.
They are not on Apple Music.
Well, that makes my decision easy.
Well, they're Swedish, so they have to root for the home team.
They're on
what I said.
Because Spotify's Swedish.
Exactly. That's what I thought. So, yeah, no. So if you want to listen to The Sign, you have to do Spotify. But if you want to listen to new Taylor Swift album or The Chronic and some other stuff, you know, Apple Music has it. They're very, very similar. The catalogs, I would say, are probably 98% the same.
how many people here on the panel actually pay one of these music services every month? I pay Rhapsody. That's it.
I do. I pay Spotify. Yeah,
you pay Spotify?
Yeah.
What do you pay?
I paid Spotify. I don't anymore. I paid Pandora. I don't anymore. And I keep Ace of Base on my phone, so I don't really have to worry about where it's coming
and Christina,
from.
Christina, which one do you pay for?
I pay for Spotify.
Right. So this is going to be paying for a subscription has replaced buying CDs, clearly, right? Amongst the panelists
yeah.
who have it?
That's for me, yeah.
You don't buy CDs.
Yeah,
Christina, you buy CDs and you pay for Spotify?
CDs. Yeah, I pay for a lot of media. You don't want to know how much I spend a month on media.
Hold on
Let's
second.
Not even talk.
Why
services.
Would you
it's
pay for a CD if you paid for Spotify? Oh, it's a cappella.
Or it might not be on Spotify, or I really like the band and I want to support them. And so I want to have it just in case it gets removed from the streaming catalog because I don't
Which
trust
does happen. Does happen.
Catalog not to do stuff.
Yeah.
Case in point, Tom York hates Spotify. He is on Apple Music, however. So if I wanted to listen to Tom York, I would need to like have his albums in iTunes. Now he's in Apple Music, so that would be fine. But yeah.
Is every adult, because right now I think Spotify is at 20 million paid?
About 20 million, paid, yeah.
Which to me is extraordinary at $8 a pop?
It's actually, no, it's $10 a month.
$10 a month?
Ten. Yeah.
They're making $2.4 billion a year now. This
yeah,
is
they're
gonna
losing
become,
money, though.
I mean, what's that?
Yeah, but Spotify's not profitable. Yeah.
Right, because they have to give 70 cents on the dollar, 80 cents
70,
on the dollar?
70, yeah. Just over, yeah.
Just over 70 cents to that.
Yeah.
And that's still not paying what someone would, like, this whole streaming music thing is kind of destroying the music business in general. Not that it hasn't always been a sham, but right now it's like, oh, well, they're kind of running my music and they're sort of paying me for it. But if you're on the mid to lower level, you're getting screwed.
You're not getting
royally.
Anything. Yeah.
And so Spotify making however much money they're making, they still don't make any money. And I personally, I own most of my own music. And that's one of the things I actually spend money on.
Right.
But I prefer to have it. But they're not making money. Like, how long is this pyramid going to exist? Like, Pandora is like on pins and needles begging for extensions to keep their boat afloat. And they're playing I'm Happy 42 billion times a hour, and Pharrell gets 32 cents a year. Like, it's really a scam system, and all the cards are going to fall, blah, 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 blah.
All right, when we get back from this commercial break, I want to know what's the future of these services. Is the music industry going to shut them all down? Which one should we buy? And what impact iTunes music is going to make on Spotify? Is this going to validate the category, or is it going to cut into their 20 million subscribers when we get back? And after this amazing message from our good pal, Leo Laporte.
It's time to talk about my mattress. Hi, everybody. Leo Laporte here. Jumping in, barging in. We're going to get back to the show in just a second. But I want to tell you about Casper. They're amazing mattresses made in the U.S. Premium quality for a fraction of the cost. Mattresses that are so great that I use them. I sent one to my son. My daughter's going to get one in the fall when she goes back to school. They come in a box. First of all, this mattress is a lot smaller in the box than it's going to be when you open it up. That makes it really easy to get into an apartment, to get up the stairs, to get into your guest room. That was a huge deal. You see here, our mattress, they give you a tool, you open it up. It goes, and then you get the most amazing mattress you have ever tried. Soft, comfortable, but firm. It's subtly firm. I don't know how to describe this. It has just the right sink and bounce. It feels good on your back, but your hips don't like aren't getting bruised by the firm. I can't describe it, but you've got to try it. And one of the things I love about Casper is they do let you try it for 100 nights. This blows me away. And I think they had to do this because, frankly, people are saying, well, I want to try a mattress before I buy it. I mean, don't I? But we all know, and I've done this, and I've been very unhappy with the results. We've all gone to a mattress store, you know, lie on a mattress. Is that good? Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it's completely unlike sleeping on one. You're there for a couple of minutes with a sales lady staring at you, giving you the stink eye. That's no way to try a mattress. This is so much better. Casper will deliver it free. You sleep on it for as many as 100 nights. If you don't like it, they'll take it back. No cost to you. Shipping free, everything. So you have a 100-day guarantee, which is unbelievable. This is such a great mattress. They start at $500 for a twin. They're easy for a student, for somebody getting started, or somebody who's just not happy with their mattress. This is a great mattress. We've sold so many of them now, and I've heard from so many of you who say you love your Caspers. Try it out at casper.com/twit. Enter the promo code TWIT, and you're going to get $50 off. And that makes it even better. Casper.com/twit. Use the offer code TWIT to save $50 on your new mattress. Your favorite mattress ever. Casper.com/twit. And we thank them for their support of This Week in Tech. Now back to the news.
I'm going to get one of those Casper mattresses. I'm going to log into Wealthfront. And I'm just going to set my risk profile. They got their money's worth in that ad.
Yeah.
All right. So
I would watch that again.
The ad was hilarious. I like these in the field ads of Leo rolling around. they should do one of him just rolling around in audiobooks for Audible. I was hoping we'd have an Audible ad today. I've got so many great selections. I feel horrible we don't have it. All right. Is this, Peter, okay. when Apple embraces the vertical you're in and you're Spotify and you own it, let's face it, they have 20 million. They own it up to now.
Yeah.
It's an incredible product. They just added podcasts to it, which is amazing. They reached out to me. I'm not sure exactly what they're looking to do there, but
they want to stream podcasts through the
I know,
service.
But they don't have to ask for my permission to do that, I don't think. Maybe they want to put ads against it or something. I'm not sure why they reached out.
They may want to because for the free tier there are ads.
Oh, there are. Yeah. Oh, so they probably need me to sign off on it or something.
I don't know.
I don't care. As long as they just don't cut my ads out of it, I'm fine with it. Yeah. Is this a net positive for Spotify in that more people will become aware of the space and then compare Coke and Pepsi? Or is this going to cut into the 20 million people? Would you be long or short Spotify?
Well, so I think it does validate the category for Spotify, which is a good thing. I think it does suck a lot of the oxygen out of the room for anybody that isn't Spotify and Apple Music. So
are you referring to Tidal?
Tidal is barely worth even mentioning. but I think RDO.
RDO.
Rhapsody.
Sir. I use Rhapsody. I love it.
You know, I guess Google's option.
Google has an option too in this?
Yeah, Google Play.
They do.
Google Play Music.
Okay.
Yep.
And then actually there's also the YouTube related sort of YouTube service.
Music Match or Music Key or whatever it is.
Yeah, Music Key.
So we have 7 or 8 of these people.
Yeah.
Throw Amazon in there too, why not?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the Amazon Prime one is pretty limited.
It's limited.
But it's free with your Prime subscription.
So, yep.
Spotify will be around, obviously.
I think Spotify is
going
to be.
This will validate it.
Yeah.
iTunes will get better as a product. It's a little bit clunky right now. Let's assume they let Ian Rogers clean that whole mess up a little bit, make the software a little bit cleaner. It's a 1.0. It'll be a two-horse race then, you think?
I think it'll be a two-horse race with, like, the smaller competitors will be in there. It's going to be – it kind of reminds me of, like, the airline business where they're big businesses, but really low margin and hard to make any money. So, but you kind of can't get out. You have these high – it's like when you run an airline, you have these really high fixed costs, which are fuel,
planes,
and pilots, and planes,
right,
and
rent.
Rent and all these things. And these services are the same. I mean, Spotify pays 70 cents plus out of every dollar.
Pandora's been crying about their deal every year since they started.
Well, and it's – I mean, I think that there's this big gap between what the market values music at and what you can and what, you know, the industry values music at, right? Mm-hmm. And bridging that gap is very difficult, and we sort of come at this $10 a month way to split the difference. But
which is one CD, which is 10 CDs a year.
But that's more than most people ever spent.
CDs.
If you look historically, most people only spent about $60 a year on music.
Right. So this is a huge uplift, Christina. If everybody in the country who bought CDs then wound up doing this, it'd be a huge uplift, wouldn't it?
It would. And the only way that this works, I mean, I spoke on Monday, I spoke with Jimmy Iovine, I spoke with Eddie Q, and I spoke with Trent Reznor about Apple Music. And, you know, Eddie Q was really clear, you know, that even because I asked him, I said, look, all these products are basically having the same library. They're kind of offering the same kind of utility.
Yeah.
What's your differentiator? You know, how are you going to make a difference?
The confusing UI.
Well, I mean, that's part of it. I think their recommendations actually are a lot better.
Yeah.
Than Spotify's. I've been a Spotify user for like 6 years. I like Spotify, but if you're a new user kind of getting into it, I think that the advantage of having all of your purchases sit alongside the rest of the library, sitting alongside radio, sitting alongside recommendations works really well. I think that their onboarding experience is superior. I think that the Beats One thing, it could be a differentiator. But I mean, really, that they're aware that the experience is going to be what has to differentiate them. But I mean, you know, Jimmy Iovine was really key in saying, he said, look, the only way this works, the only way that the record industry, that the artist, that anybody makes any money off of this is if it scales. Mm. And the only way it scales is if it's more than a utility and people see it as a service. And scale is not 20 million. 20 million is a drop in the bucket. Yeah. Scale to me, I would say, is like 100 million, 200 million. Mm. That's if this is going to work, is what it has to reach.
Because right now it's only going to be $1 billion in revenue in the United States or something, and that's not enough for the music industry.
But the music industry historically was never that big of a business.
Yes, so they're just crying.
It was kind of a problem because it blew up. It reached these heights kind of the same time as the .com era. Because of CDs, 1999, 2000, with the height of Napster, everything happened where the music industry reached these historic highs. And that was an anomaly in retrospect. But then kind of there was the crash. There was kind of the digital thing that happened. And frankly, the music industry is still responding to what happened 15 years ago with Napster. They are still not dealing with what happened with that situation. They still haven't embraced reality. And I think streaming is kind of their last hope if they want this to be something that can work. Trent Reznor was saying, you know, he's gone through kind of the gamut, you know, as a legacy artist. He has gone through the highs and the lows. He left the record industry kind of establishment, tried to do the pay your own thing, tried to kind of do his own
crowdfunding.
Exactly. And he said, you know, at the end of the day, all of it felt like gimmicks. And so, you know, he said, I don't regret doing it at the time, but I wouldn't do it again. And so, you know, if Trent Reznor is saying, I can't make this sort of thing work, and he had to go back to being on a more traditional label and try to figure things out, he's saying, look, at the end of the day, I'm an artist, period. But his goal is to try to make it so that people can make a living doing this.
Oh, Doctor, you got rid of your service, so you're no longer paying the $10 a month.
I just want to say that that scale issue is the one big thing that Apple can provide to a music genre. Like, there are people that I know that call me up because they're not savvy or whatever. Like, oh, this thing came on. It's free for 3 months. Should I try it? I'm like, well, it's free for 3 months. Why wouldn't you try it? And so they installed it. So a lot of people, they're going to get like that have never paid for Spotify. I know people that don't use Pandora.
Is it going to automatically bill all of us who put the trial on?
In 3 months, it does. Yes.
So I'm going to have to unsubscribe. I'm going to find out that I'm a subscriber a month before when they get the bill.
Yes.
And nobody ever looks at their bills for iTunes.
For three months, they get the hooking people. Like, they get you to like it, they get you to use it, and hopefully they make a couple of tweaks and upgrades to it. But Apple has that ability to say, hey, I'm putting a cookie on everybody's plate. Take a bite if you want. As opposed to Google with different phones and different services, Apple's ubiquity is just awesome for that scale. So hopefully it works out for the music industry that way.
Will this ever be built in, Peter, to your Verizon, now that you work at Verizon or AT&T? You speak for Verizon, correct?
Yeah, let me just say.
You're here today as the official spokesperson for
Verizon. I can actually get you a great deal on service.
Can you? So. Yeah. Can I get my cap lifted? Yeah. But as a spokesperson for Verizon, which you're not, what's the story with, like, could this ever just be bundled?
It's been done, actually.
It has.
Was it
Rhapsody or Radio?
Was it Cricket that offered it bundled?
I just think it should be included with your
AT&T bill. Actually did. Yeah. AT&T actually did. They had a family plan with Beats Music, actually, where you could get a discount. And I think Sprint did, too. No, it was T-Mobile. T-Mobile who offered you some sort of free data transfer if you also used your streaming service. So, yeah, I mean, different people have tried to bundle it. I think that, honestly, having iTunes, having it part of your Apple account makes it easier for a lot of people because they've already got your credit card. So that just makes it
easier
for that to charge than anything else.
Apple is so profitable now, and they're trying to go downstream, Peter.
Yeah.
Would it not make sense for Apple to say, we'll just pay for the first year of anybody who buys a new device with us, because it's costing them $7 a month. Maybe they can get the carrier to pick up $350 of it. They pick up $350 of it. And just like when you buy an iPhone or you buy the new Mac, it's just like, hey, guess what? If you buy a Windows machine or you buy whatever else, an Android, you're not going to get unlimited music for your first year. Wouldn't that be like a huge differentiator in buying or no?
Yes. I think that they have probably realized that they might get an anti-competitive issue.
Yeah.
Because if you are going to give something away like that.
Bundling
creates an antitrust, anti-competition issue. Yeah. And the
if
last
you have
thing,
market share. which they don't own.
Well, except that they have market share in terms of the platform. And so Microsoft had this issue when they were trying to get into browsers, which they had zero market share of the browser.
They bundled it. They made the browser free.
Exactly. And so
the rest is history.
Yes.
I mean, Apple's still the number one music retailer. I mean, it's falling year over year, but they're still the number one music retailer.
So this is where I think Prime is something very special. How many of the four people we have on panels? I'm a Prime subscriber for five years,
Prime.
I think. Who is Prime?
6 years Ooh. Here.
6 years?
I don't think you're allowed to not be Prime. I think
Doctor, you're Prime or not?
I got like four Primes because I keep just loading up.
So you're in your Prime.
Everybody's Prime.
Get things four times faster.
Here's the interesting thing. Does everybody know how much Prime costs now? Because when it started, it was $50.
It was like $100 now, I think.
What is it now?
I think it's $100 now.
It's $100, $99.
I didn't even know this was going up. I cannot live without Prime.
Yeah.
How many people in the studio are Prime?
I would pay $150.
Oh my God. Like literally almost everybody except for the kid who's here with his mom. He didn't. Your mom has Prime. Don't worry. I'm
Prime
pretty
Junior.
Sure of that.
Oh,
I mean,
you know
and Prime, how many people who have Prime have watched an Amazon video in the last 30 days? Who has
last
loaded
30 days?
Amazon?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, I watch TV on it all the time.
There's a lot of great stuff on Amazon Prime. It's like in our household, I would say 60% Netflix, 40% Amazon Prime. Why wouldn't Amazon just include this in their Prime and make Prime a little bit more
expensive? They have a music service. The problem is that they can't afford to put the a la carte offering, mm-hmm. I think, in the service. Yeah. I think that it would honestly hit their margins too much. So instead, what they have is they have like the radio, like the Pandora type thing. They have the Music Match, which lets you upload your existing purchases to their library and then stream that. And then they have like, I don't know, maybe like 150,000, 200,000 albums.
Yeah,
I think it's more than that. It might be like 2 million.
It's more,
albums,
but it's very limited compared with Spotify.
Exactly. Yeah. It's very limited compared to Spotify. The great thing, though, is that, you know, if you've uploaded your music like me, I tend to have a mirror of my iTunes uploaded to Amazon. I can use like my Amazon Echo and be like, play whatever, and it'll play, you know, that album from my playlist. So that's the
I
one
did the same thing. I uploaded my collection. It's like $25 a year. And
you upload your collection
I backed up my collection. It was like, I had like about 125 gigs of music. It took me about 4 days. I
just click upload it, put your MP3s up.
Yeah. And they match everything that they have in their catalog already. And
does
then,
it support FLAC or not? I wonder.
I don't know if it supports FLAC.
I have to say, like, I think
that I don't, but I think that they then like down mix it to MP3 to playback, but I think you can upload.
I've been really like getting into some FLAC. My friend was like, "You guys try FLAC or whatever," and then I got these nice speakers that actually I read about on GDGT.com. These really beautiful speakers that you guys give a high rating to, but they're computer speakers. I can actually think I can tell the difference. I was listening to Dire Straits, which is just beautiful music on the greatest hits on FLAC. Can you hear the difference, Peter?
If I have really nice headphones and I'm playing on something that can handle the high, you know, the high fidelity audio, I can sort
is
of tell.
Is that the digital audio converter?
Yeah, I had the Astell and Kearns player, which was the 24.
The 24-bit one?
Yeah, the one that iRiver made. I can sort of tell, but but not enough to justify the hassle and the expense.
And that is Tidal's reason to death, right? Like they have higher fidelity?
And Deezer's the same way. Yeah, they have higher fidelity streaming. And so, and to be clear, there's kind of a difference between FLAC and then having like 24-bit FLAC, because you could just have FLAC that would be from a CD file that would still be 16-bit and technically wouldn't sound any better in a lot of A/B tests than just having, you know, an MP3, a lame VO or a MP3 file or something like that. But if you've got like a 24-bit FLAC file, you know, that's quote unquote HD audio. If you've got really good hearing and good speakers, then, you know, I guess that has better fidelity. I don't know.
And so Tidal is a complete embarrassment. The PR.
It's such an issue.
Yeah, it's a mess.
The PR.
That's
a
company I would take. I would be CEO of Tidal.
You would be CEO of Tidal.
I think
you'd
could
be the
fix
one
it.
In three
I think
months.
All right, first three things Peter Rojas does as CEO of Tidal. Fire Jay-Z.
Yeah, fire everybody.
Fire everybody. Just ask Madonna to please not put her leg on the desk anymore. That was the most absurd thing. It was like, Grandma just put her leg on the desk. What's the when she's signing
the manifesto.
I'm like, what's the manifesto? Did you help these people be worth $200 million instead of just $50 million?
You know, the first thing I would have done was I'd say, you know what? We're going to get all the rich artists to say, we're going to give all of our profits from the first year to poor artists on the service.
Of course. So. Yes. That would be a perfect thing.
Yeah. Then
that
people
was the
are like, okay.
Stupidest press conference I've ever seen.
Pure
incompetence.
Yeah. It was like the French Revolution, all the nobility being like, hold on, what about us?
You know? Exactly. We are going to declare our independence from receiving checks from Spotify. We're going to receive checks from ourselves. Oh, doctor, please comment.
When you, When you have time, go look at Jay-Z's freestyle about Tidal and the music industry.
All right, we'll cue that up. Give it to the control room, please. Can we cue up that?
I would if there weren't a few F-bombs littered throughout.
There are F-bombs.
Oh, there are? Okay, we'll just beep the F-bomb.
In general, like when you make that statement of how rich they are, it's the same thing when I tell people all the time when they complain about athletes. Oh, athletes, how did this guy make $300 million? I'm like, I don't care if he's made $300 million. Who could cut that check? How much money are they making? Somebody could cut the check. Yes. Jay-Z gets paid. Jay-Z's out there shaking his butt on the stage like everybody else to get paid. No, I don't care how much money he's got.
But
somebody's paying him.
But the problem is, it's not. I don't have a problem with getting paid. I have the problem with complaining about not getting paid enough. There's a big difference.
There's a little bit.
There's a big difference.
God, this arena is sold out at $300 a ticket. Why the hell don't I have $350 a ticket?
Yeah.
Can I get another $50 per ticket?
So smart.
Brutal. Okay, hey.
So smart with her letter because she pointed out the fact that, look, I'm fine. I'm making enough money to pay, you know, my people, but it's the smaller artists who aren't making money. That's why, like, her approach was
like
so
her photographer? Like her photographers?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
wait, who is this?
I'm just saying.
When she did her open letter to Apple. Yeah, you know, I mean, she played that perfectly. She was able to say, look, I have enough money. This isn't about me being a petulant child. It's about the artists who can't afford to do this. And so I'm taking a stand. So, you know, because I'm the only one who can kind of say this and Apple can't screw me over. If the title artist had said that, then I think that it would have been a different conversation. Instead, it came across like the rich people are saying, we're not making enough money, pay us more. And, you know, the whether or not they're really fighting or care about, you know, the indie artists, the unsigned artists, is irrelevant because it just the messaging came across. The optics looked like rich people complaining.
I'm not saying they were great about it. I'm just giving a little perspective to the situation. What? Yes, they still look douchey, but at the same time, yes. they weren't full douche.
It was like a half douche moment.
It's like, man, you got all this money, you're complaining, and you're complaining about the wrong thing. But you have a point to complain, I guess, if that's you. I mean, if I'm at a job and I've got a problem with the job.
The optics are just terrible. Yeah.
And everything else they did was wrong. Like, if you're going to do this, first of all, actually hire somebody who knows design. Steal somebody. Because the real problem was it looked like trash. I opened it up and I thought my daughter made it, and she's a pretty good artist. I'm like, well, if she made this, I'd be awesome. Good job, girl.
Also, if you're going to take all our time for a press release, aren't you obligated to at least tell us what is unique about this product and why we should download it and care? They literally did not mention the product.
They thought they did. They thought $20. That artists get paid a little bit more. And you can get the higher fidelity streams.
Yeah, so...
They felt like that was enough.
I can pay twice as much as my Spotify to make sure that the artists get paid more for sound quality that I cannot differentiate.
Yeah.
Exactly. For all that, she just went on there and said, buy my albums. Like, just keep buying my albums. Don't stream me. Just buy my music.
All right.
Because
look, I don't have a problem with, like, you know, if you're an artist and you don't feel like you're getting paid enough by Spotify or Apple Music or whatever, don't put your stuff on there. Like, I don't.
I think that was a power move by Taylor Swift to say, "If you want my album, go buy it. I want the album to be your experience."
And she had one of the record sale albums of all time.
Of course she did. If it's on Spotify, who the hell's going to buy it?
And she did. And she windowed it.
Perfectly played.
She dunked on everybody, and she walked out the gym.
Perfect. All right, listen. Let's take a moment to revel in how amazing Squarespace is. I use Squarespace every week. I am absolutely very disappointed in Leo asking me to host this week because he will not let me read the ads. I could read that Squarespace ad like you would not believe because I love that product. Let's cut to Leo talking about a product I love, Squarespace.
If I might interrupt briefly, give the panel a chance to get a drink, go to the bathroom. You stay here because I want to tell you about Squarespace, the place to make your next website. Squarespace is two things. It's the best hosting in the world. I mean, unbelievable. Never goes down. Totally committed to reliable hosting. And one of the reasons they can do that is because it's the best software on top of it. The software that runs Squarespace is mobile responsive. Your site will look good on any size screen, from a 55-inch giant screen in the living room to a little tiny 3.5-inch BlackBerry. Anywhere in between, it looks great. It's responsive. It's fast. It's reliable. It's secure. You can do e-commerce. Any Squarespace site supports e-commerce. In fact, right now, they've got a really good deal. Now, I should say you can try this for free. Just press that Get Started button. You don't need to give them a credit card. Get 2 weeks, try it. But if you use the promo code TWIT, you can get $100 in AdWords credit. If for business and commerce customers, $100 in AdWords credits, that means that's great. You can put ads on Google AdWords to promote your new business, and 10% off, showing your support for the show. So Squarespace.com, it's as little as $8 a month. And when you sign up for a year, you get the domain name free. Beautiful designs for any kind of business, personal blog. If you're a band, you'll love it. If you're a restaurant, you'll love it. It's robust. It's reliable. It's secure. It's stable. $8 a month. And if you sign up for the business or commerce plan, $100 in AdWords credit. And no matter what plan you sign up for, 10% off when you use the offer code TWIT. All in all, a great deal. Squarespace.com. Use a promo code TWIT. Squarespace. Build it beautiful. Speaking of beautiful, look at this fabulous panel. Back to TWIT.
Thank you, Leo. And I agree. What a good-looking panel. Oh, Doctor is with us. Christina Warren is with us. And Peter Rojas is with us for This Week in Tech. Thank you, Squarespace. Peter, you use Squarespace and love it?
Yeah, I use it for my personal blog.
Okay. And it's fantastic.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I like about it is...
What do you like about Squarespace?
Well, is that I don't have to worry about having a nice-looking mobile version.
Because it's all responsive.
It's all responsive.
That's right, it is all responsive.
I was able to import everything from... I had used WordPress before, and I'd paid to host WordPress.
Yeah, WordPress-style platform.
And for me, it was just... I update my blog, you know, once or twice a month, and so having to constantly patch and worry about security.
It's a little bit more lightweight, but still fully featured. It's a fresher type of blog.
I had some spam injected into the comments, into my WordPress install.
Squarespace is wonderful.
Yeah, so absolutely. I don't have to worry about that with Squarespace.
All right, here's something bizarre. The FBI is investigating 11 attacks on San Francisco area internet lines. FBI is currently investigating at least 11 physical attacks on high-capacity internet cables in California's San Francisco Bay Area dating back a year, including one early Tuesday morning. Agents confirmed the attack. The latest attack disrupted internet service for businesses, yada, yada, yada. FBI declined to specify how significantly the attack affected customers, citing an ongoing investigation. But these are physical attacks, and they were done where there are no cameras. Does anybody have any idea or any theory on what this might be? Because literally in the stories I read about it, they were just like a USA Today story and it kind of went away. There doesn't seem to be any follow-up to this or any safeguards about the lines. And is this terrorism motivated? Is it a disgruntled employee? Why would somebody go around cutting fiber lines? They hate the internet? I don't understand. Everybody loves the internet.
I think it's the CIA. It's a tactical move. The FBI found out it's the CIA. Now they're trying to cover it up. I got a full hat on, by the way. You can't see it.
All right. So there's Adam Curry's take on it. Okay. We got the tinfoil hat take on it. This is the I basically had to drop an Adam Curry reference at least once during the show for the superfans. What do you think this is?
So my guess is it's not terrorism, because if it were terrorism, it's not going to be especially effective to cut
a fiber line. I mean, isn't the whole point of the internet is that it's redundant?
I think there's enough redundancy in the Bay Area that it wouldn't be a problem. Though I don't know. I don't know the extent of what's being done here. If I had to guess, it'd probably be people that are sort of disgruntled by the influx of tech people into the Bay Area.
Ah.
More. If I just had to guess without knowing any more than...
You would think it's the anarchists.
Maybe, probably.
Because there are people from the technology industry moving into San Francisco. Never mind.
Yeah, I know.
Peter's literally unpacking.
There's no fiber going into my house, so you can't
literally
cut it
no
bay.
Fiber. Christina, any idea about this or thoughts on why somebody would be cutting internet cables?
I don't know. Do they hate Comcast? Do they hate Verizon? Like, I don't
know. Yes, everybody does.
Everyone does.
Everybody does.
I work for Verizon. I'm not a fan of the company.
Right. So exactly. So maybe it's somebody against the telecom. No, I genuinely have no idea. It's bizarre.
And if it was a one-off thing, I would not bring it up as a story. But 11 times? Is this not... This
more
must
than
be
likely
a psychotic
person. It's somebody angry about the influx of inequality in that area, and a guy works on a pole somewhere hooking up cable lines. He's walking into somebody's house, and it used to be a crappy brownstone, and somebody moves in, puts $40 million into it, and it looks like a chateau because he knows where all the cameras are. He knows how to get to all the lines. Obviously, he's somebody who works in that area to know what's going on around him.
Inside job.
To do it. Yeah. So, I mean, it's probably a disgruntled guy who's like, look,
Columbus.
I can't afford to live here anymore. So, you guys like the internet? Well, screw your internet. There's no internet for you.
Doctor, I think you're like the Columbo of This Week in Tech. It's, oh, one more thing there. You know, Jason, they said one more thing. You know, it could be that it's an inside job because he knows where the cameras are.
Yeah, no soup for you. No soup for you.
No soup. All right, listen. Is BlackBerry's upcoming Android phone coming to AT&T? Yes, we've expected it for a month or so, says The Verge. BlackBerry's working on Android phone with a dual curved display. I have actually the curved display on the Galaxy Note. It's pretty cool.
The S6 Edge.
The S6 Edge.
You have the Note or the Note Edge?
I have
the Note
one with the one.
The Note Edge.
The Note Edge. Yeah. It doesn't have two edges.
Yeah.
The other one has two edges. What does this mean for BlackBerry? Because they had this whole BlackBerry 10 operating system, but you could port things on from the side.
Total failure, side load. No one cares.
Yeah.
Nobody cares.
Well, so, yeah, BlackBerry, what they did
too
is
little,
they supported the Android runtime environment. So you could, sideload Android apps, or developers could very easily port their apps over to
BlackBerry
Store.
We did for Inside.com, yeah.
And then they actually also, I think, added support for the Amazon Android
store. Yeah, now the Amazon App Store actually comes pre-installed on it, so you can just install the apps that way. They don't have the Google Play services, so you still can't get Snapchat or Instagram or Netflix or Uber, but you can get other stuff. I mean, genuinely, at this point, I mean, I've been saying for close to a year now, like, they just need to stop making devices altogether and just become a MDM company.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That didn't even sound like a phone. You just described a non-phone to me. If I can't install Instagram or Uber or what is this device for? I mean, I don't need to make phone calls anymore. I'm usually just chatting with everyone.
But it has a keyboard. It has a physical keyboard. I love the idea that
this has a slide-up physical keyboard. To me, that seems like a genius device. I still have my BlackBerry 210, and I carry it with me when I need to write stuff. What's that?
So you can get your nails done again and actually have a physical keyboard?
I love having the physical keyboard. And this is what I've been waiting for. I don't know if you guys can see this on my – oh, you can't see my screen. But on that Verge story, there is a slider where they show the slide-up keyboard.
It's sort of like a vertical orientation slider.
Yeah, you just slide it up, which is, I think, the reason they went after the talk show guy who was making the
– Ryan Seacrest?
Yeah, Ryan Seacrest.
Because
he was doing –
with the typo.
The typo. The keyboard, yeah.
So I think two comments on that. I mean, when a – talk show guy starts making gadgets, that's sort of proof that we are in a bubble. They were clearly suing him to stop him from doing exactly this, which is the new product they have, which is now on the screen, which to me, if I could take my iPhone 6 and slide up and have a keyboard, I would be so happy right now. Do you think Apple will ever do this? Because it seems like
never. Never.
That was Steve Jobs' thing, right?
They
hated it.
They will not. I will say that I know this from sources that I have.
Yes, as the founder of Gizmodo and Engadget.
That at one point, they did
drum roll
an iPhone with a keyboard off to carriers.
They showed it off to carriers
just as a prototype to kind of gauge carrier interest and see.
And the carriers wanted it.
Of course,
so that made Steve Jobs
They were interested, but it was one of those things where I don't think that they felt like it made sense to kind of fork the path that they were on. They kind of thought, eventually, the software-based keyboards will get to a place where...
Have the keyboards gotten there?
They have improved a lot. If you go back and use an original iPhone on the original iOS...
Oh, my God.
You would notice a huge difference in the responsiveness.
The predictive stuff is so good now, too.
Yes.
You know?
Who's typing anymore? I talk to my phone. Siri, tell Jason stop talking crazy because I ain't got time to type it. Send.
And then you know what it sends me? Tell Jason 7 donuts.
Oh, man, look.
Autocorrect.
No,
autocorrect.
It's really remarkable. Like, my Apple Watch is like 99%
spot on. Yeah, the Apple
Watch
is great.
Every time I talk, it's insane how accurate it is. Like, I mean, I'm in love with
this. So all of you guys have Apple Watches on. I see that. Yes, Christina, you have one?
I do. I don't have it on right this second, but it's charging right now.
If you guys leave the house without your Apple Watches, do you go back and get them? If you're within 3 minutes. Yes?
I have.
Back for the watch? Oh, doctor, have you gone back for your watch? Yes or no?
No.
So you will not go back for it. It's not that essential yet.
I'm not attached to anything. Don't have anything you can't leave.
What about your phone? If you leave your phone, you don't go back for it.
I went out to the store last night. I left my phone. I left it right. And you know what the worst part is for me? The only reason I would go back for my phone is because it has my ID and my cards in the back of my phone.
All right,
so
that makes sense.
My phone,
so you put them both together. So you never. What about you, Peter? Have you gone back for the watch?
Not for the watch, but obviously for
you go back for the phone.
For the phone, yeah, of course. Yeah.
So when, Peter, will these phones have in them the ability to make a phone call without having
the watch? You mean
the watch without the phone?
In other words, when will it have a 4G connection in the watch itself? Because that, to me, is when I will love it. Because I don't use it anymore. I only use my Fitbit because all I care about is losing weight right now.
You know,
I don't want to be made fun of in the subreddit. I hate fat Jasons.
I mean, people have sold watch phones, right? I mean, Samsung makes one.
They do make one.
A version of the Gear that has a LTE radio. And the problem is the battery life is terrible because you can't get a big enough battery to support the LTE.
How long does it realistically last?
I mean, you're not going to get all day out of it.
Right. You don't get all day out of this, do you?
Out of this? Yeah, I get 2 days easy. Yeah.
What?
You know what? Here's why I get 2 days out of it.
Because you don't have notifications turned on.
No, I have notifications turned on. I get 2 days out of it because I don't think the watch is that great, so I don't use it that much.
Ah, but you still wear it.
I get a day.
Yeah. I've actually like having something that tells me the weather.
So what watch face are you all using? Nobody's using Mickey. Everybody uses the one dense with information, correct?
The utility
is the only one you could possibly use, correct, Doctor? Utility?
Yes, sir.
You would never use any other one.
I had a butterfly on for like a week, and then I gave that up. That was the only thing I ever switched to.
A final question here. What is your favorite app? Is there an essential app for any of you? Christina, what's the essential app on your iWatch?
I like Workflow.
Workflow?
Yeah.
What's Workflow?
So Workflow is kind of like
You're breaking up. Hold on. Let's go to Odoctor first.
We got
to
unplug your mic and replug it in if you could do that, Christina.
Okay. Let's go Odoctor. Odoctor, what is your essential app? He's looking through them now. Clearly, none are essential.
My heart rate and FitStar.
Okay, your heart rate, which right now I'm going to guess is 70.
No, he's talking to you. It's racing.
I know. I was about to say it might be a little excited, so let me check it. I'll let it run while you're asking somebody else. But those two things are ones I check all the time.
What's the other one?
FitStar. It's like an exercise thing.
How's that working out for you?
I'm still fat. I mean, you know.
Okay. So what do? You just like you take the donut and you take a bite and then you get like the calorie count of the...
I walk my dog every day for an hour. I just got a spin bike, so I spin every day now 45 minutes. If I don't start losing weight in the next month or so, my heart rate's at 84, so you got me all excited. It's jumping up to 87. See?
Okay.
But so I'm trying. I'm working on it eventually.
You know what? I'll give you the secret. You read these two books on Audible. We'll give them a free ad right now. Why We're Fat and Wheat Belly. I listened to both of those. You can tell J. Cal's a little slimmer right now. I lost 20 pounds. I got 10 to go.
I'm fat because I love pasta.
I'm almost Peter Rojas skinny.
I love pasta and I love cooking. That's why I'm fat. I know why.
Pasta and bread. That's the books. Okay, what's your favorite?
I think Dark Sky probably the most useful.
What is Dark Sky?
Dark Sky is a weather app that does a pretty good job of localizing the weather for where you're at and letting you know if it's going to rain.
Ah, so it localizes it on a more granular level.
I was going to say, isn't it always raining in San Francisco?
Yeah, wow, you picked that for the drought? I mean, you moved here from New York. You're going to delete that off your phone now.
It's not useful, not going to get much use.
It's like, still hasn't rained in 2 years.
And then the other one I use is Sunrise, the calendar app.
I love Sunrise.
Sunrise is a great product.
So great. And Microsoft bought that.
I know, $100 million deal. Great acquisition on their part.
I have to say, Microsoft is impressing me. Let's do our final ad from Prosper, which is an amazing company. And when we get back, we're going to talk about the NSA. And Google is mistakenly tagging black people as gorillas in Google Images. And that is a headline not from The Onion. It's from The Wall Street Journal. When we get back after this important message.
Hey, before we wrap up this week's show, I want to remind you about the place to go when you need a little cash. And it ain't your brother Louie. And it ain't the bank. It's Prosper.com. This is a great solution for anybody who wants to borrow as much as $35,000 and get it in as few as 5 days. So much better to borrow than borrowing money from your friends, your family, or putting it on your credit card. That interest rate, that'd be nuts. Go to Prosper.com. A low fixed rate loan at Prosper.com is going to save you money. What Prosper does is it's an exchange. It brings together people who have money to lend with people who need money to borrow. You're going to get a great low fixed rate. You're going to get as much as $35,000 to do something like, well, let's start by paying off those ridiculous high-rate credit cards or, I don't know, fixing up the house, put it into your business. It's awesome. Prosper's online marketplace makes sure that you're paired up with the right person. You get a great deal on the interest rate, and you can find out right now what your rate is without affecting your good credit if you go to prosper.com/twit. See how much you can borrow. See what that rate is. And for a limited time, when you do get a loan from Prosper, we're going to get you a $50 Visa gift card and that low interest loan $35,000 in your account in as few as 5 days, and a $50 Visa gift card. That's a great deal. Prosper.com/twit, a special offer just for you. Prosper.com/twit. Now, back to the show.
Thank you so much, Leo, for allowing me to host this week. What an honor. And for those of you who don't know, there are a ton of great shows here on the This Week in Tech Network, the Twit Network, including stuff like MacBreak Weekly, This Week in iPad, the new screensavers. Let's see what's going on around the network.
Previously on Twit.
When I talked to Trent Reznor yesterday, and I promise you guys I'm not going to say that too many times, but...
We still believe Christina's. I've been interviewing Apple executives all day. I'm so tired, bit.
MacBreak Weekly.
Today was the official launch of Apple Music, including the launch of Beats 1. It felt really, really weird that the first three or four songs, they would be saying like little like station IDs in the middle of the songs. But then I realized that I have not listened to FM radio.
And it's like, oh my God, this is this great experience. I was like, no, this is actually like how music was done for like 50 years.
Security Now.
This generated more tweets this last week than anything else. AM radio that's able to steal nearby crypto keys. If there was a lumpy looking pita bread next to your laptop at Starbucks, you might want to think twice. Using PGP to decrypt incoming mail.
This Week in Google.
Gmail now fully supports emoji. I've been kind of obsessed with emoji lately. I just feel like I'm seeing emoji and I'm old.
No, Gina, no, no.
I'm going to ask you out to lunch. All an emoji. Get ready.
And if you can't figure out the emoji, you're going hungry, Jeff. Unbelievable. We're becoming post-illiterate.
Twit. Leo says hi.
All right. There it is, folks. Make sure you check out all the great shows here on the Twit Network. And this story is bizarre and not from The Onion. Google mistakenly tags black people as gorillas, showing limits of algorithms. Google is the leader in artificial intelligence and machine learning, but the company's computers still have a lot to learn, judging by a major blunder of its Photos app this week. The app tagged two black people as gorillas, according to Jack Alessine, a web developer who spotted the error and tweeted the photo. Google Photos, y'all, effed up. My friend's not a gorilla, he wrote on Twitter. Google apologized and said it's tweaking its algorithms to fix the problems. Thoughts to the panel.
As a black man, I'll start off by saying sometimes people do look like gorillas. You know what I mean? Sometimes you see a big dude, I mean, a big nose. I'm just saying, I got a cousin that's blacker than my iPhone, and I might miscommunicate him with someone swinging from a tree if he was running, cutting grass or something. I don't know. I mean, something like this happened a long time ago. I'm just making a joke. See, that's what I mean about people being sensitive. I'm black. I can say it. Ain't nobody going to say nothing to me. But, you know, there was something like this that happened before with one of the webcams or something.
Wouldn't track black people.
Yeah, like, I was like, I love stuff like that. Like, man, I could rob somebody when nobody even knows. I just come in like a shade in the night. So if I went on to the wrong place and they thought I was a gorilla, I could get away with something. So there's good and bad and everything, you know.
Algorithms. Not very accurate.
Yeah.
Wow. Did gorillas.
Didn't we see this with Flickr also, where they had Flickr a thing where they were auto-tagging photos and creating the same thing? I mean, right. I mean, a few weeks ago, right, Google Photos launched, and we were all going nuts over how great it was. You could enter a word, and it would automatically pull up. You would just, you know, search for something, and if you entered, like, tables, it'd pick up every time there's a table in the background or something like that. So, we're sort of seeing the limits of machine learning and how, you know, you still need human beings on some part of this process to say, you know what, for this we got to start to pull back the filter a little bit, be a little less.
It's going to be an adjustment in society, this artificial intelligence thing, where we're like trying to use the robots or Siri or whatever it is, and we ask them to do something for us, and they just completely F it up.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's. I mean, there's a literalness to any computer process that.
Yeah.
And it's when things start to become truly artificially intelligent is when they're able to infer things that, you know, we don't literally say or literally mean.
When I told my daughter we're getting a babysitter, and she said, I don't want them to sit on me. And I was like, wow, you've got a future, kid. Where's the rim shot on that one? All right, moving on from this obvious insanity. Crazy story that is just breaking out last night from The Intercept. X key score at a glance. The NSA headquarters is got 700, no fewer than 700 servers at 150 sites all over the world, and they are analyzing at a level that is considered better than Google or as good as Google from these documents that The Guardian has released. They seem to have the flow from fiber optics cables that make up the backbone of the world's communication network, among other sources for processing. As of 2008, the surveillance system boasted approximately 150 field sites in the United States, Mexico, Brazil, United Kingdom, yada, yada, yada. And this is where it gets interesting. These servers store full take data at the collection sites, meaning that they capture all of the traffic collected and, as of 2009, stored content for 3 to 5 days and metadata for 30 to 45 days. NSA documents indicate that tens of billions of records are stored in its database. It is a fully distributed processing and query system that runs on machines around the world. At field sites, KeyStore can run on multiple computers that gives the ability to scale in both processing power and storage. And they're able to essentially track everything that anybody on the internet does just by knowing your email. It's worse than we thought. Is this a shock or a surprise to you, Christina?
Sadly, no, it's not. Because, I mean, this is all kind of coming out of the revelations that, Edward Snowden released now 2 years ago. But I think still, even though I'm not surprised, seeing it and seeing the documents in black and white is still one of those things that makes me, as an American, especially, you know, July 4th weekend, go, really? Really? This is what our country has kind of come to this level of mass surveillance. I'm not surprised, but it's still really eye-opening and in a lot of ways kind of terrifying.
Oh, Doctor, what are your thoughts on this? Surprising to you?
Not surprising. I have friends that work for Lockheed Martin, and one tidbit of information that's really neat, they would never have that Google facial recognition problem because I have a friend that made some software that can not only, once it sees who you are, if it sees a picture of you with a beard, with a hat, with glasses on, it still knows somehow that it's you. And it's like so freakishly accurate, it's insane. Like, so that's the stuff that the government's buying that's being made. And Google apparently is mixing me up with a gorilla. So I would totally agree and understand that that's how things are moving. And it doesn't shock me at all from the other things that I hear that get bought by the government.
Here's an interesting fact, Peter, to all this, which is the NSA's ability to piggyback off of private companies' tracking of their own users through cookies, assuming here, is a vital instrument that allows the agency to trace the data it collects to individual users. It makes no difference if visitors switch to public Wi-Fi networks or connect to VPNs to change their IP addresses. The tracking cookie will follow them around as long as they're using the same web browser and fail to clear all their cookies. How complicit do you think the technology companies have been historically, and are they complicit now? Will this be unraveled at the end of Obama's administration?
Well, I actually think, I mean, if you know, looking at the stuff about X KeyScore, it sounds like what they're doing is by monitoring the fiber optic, you know, tapping the fiber optic cables directly. They're actually just, you know, capturing the raw data that's passing through,
right,
and then searching and making sense of it. I think, and I may be wrong here, is because, you know, these fiber optic cables are outside of the United States, the NSA right. considers them to be fair game, right?
Right.
The rules for NSA, and I admit they have been sort of bent and broken in a lot of ways, but generally speaking, the NSA considers anything outside of the actual physical jurisdiction of the United States to be fair game, even right. if it's a communication by a U.S. citizen.
Right.
And so...
So as a U.S. citizen in the United States, you obviously have more rights than outside of the United States. We can spy on Americans outside the United States, no problem.
Yeah. And
their world.
Well, if you make a phone call to a foreign country,
game
that's
over.
Different than making a phone call within, you know, the United States. I mean, I think that this stuff is not going to get wrapped up at the end of the Obama administration. I mean, if anything, whoever becomes president is probably going to be more aggressive in feeling justified in collecting this data. I think the tech companies... the tech companies are complicit in the sense that they are creating a service which encourages people to create and share a lot of personal data about themselves.
Right.
But for the most part, I mean, you know, Google and Facebook and Twitter, they don't willingly give this information up to the government. They give it up under
under duress.
Under court orders, basically.
Right.
The issue is that the FISA court has, and this is slightly separate than this X KeyScore stuff, but the FISA court doesn't push back on any requests for information. So it's not like, you know, if the government wants to or the police want to listen in on your phone calls in the United States, they have to get a warrant, right? And that's perfectly legal. You get a warrant and you can listen, tap somebody's phone calls.
Somebody has to be the voice of reason and say, you know what? It is in the public's interest to tap this person, known terrorist, who's on this message board with other terrorists, ISIS. We should do this.
I think that what we should have is we should have an actual adversarial process by which the government has to prove that they actually need this information rather than
like
it's
they
just
used to.
Now it's sort of like they want to have it because they want to be able to search it and just go through it, you know, to be, you know, in the interest of what they perceive to be the national security threat. But I think that we should it should be that you have to be able to establish in the same way you would if you wanted to.
Do you think any of this is contributing to less terrorist activity in the United States and the capturing of more terrorists? Peter,
it's
I don't know. I can't say.
Impossible to say.
Yeah,
there have been reports to say that it doesn't. And technically, let me put my full hat back on. I told you that it was an inside job. Maybe it was the NSA cutting all them fiber lines in San Francisco, trying to put a little filter coupling in so they can get what's going on. I'm not saying they did it. I'm just saying they wouldn't. And you know, if Snow didn't say something, all that stuff you talk about due diligence wouldn't be out here in the world for us to know. So things that people should do aren't always what they shouldn't do. And I still eat cookies. I'm just saying. That's how the world works.
The Pharaoh has spoken. Christina, what's your thoughts?
I don't know how I can.
Yes. With something serious, you could come back with that. I mean, do you think that this is actually contributing to a safer society in America? Obviously, it's contributing to less privacy. We know that. But is it actually preventing another 9/11? Is it preventing another, you know, I guess it was September 7th or October 7th was the bombings in Europe. Is this preventing terrorist acts, do you think, or is it just a huge waste of time?
I don't know if it's a huge waste of time, but I'm also not really convinced that it's preventing, other attacks. If it is, I would love to actually see them show us some proof of things that have been thwarted and say, this is why we need these things. But at the same time, I mean, this is why we have the FISA court. I would much prefer that we go through the legal mechanisms we have, the courts we have, you know, which are very easy to kind of go through. It's one of those things, if it's really necessary, I think that they go through those processes. Absolutely. There's a need, you know, for us to do surveillance and counterintelligence and to protect our country and protect our state. But I wonder, you know, just seeing just the broad swath of things that are happening and knowing how much information is out there and knowing how much data is being collected, you know, I'm genuinely concerned with, do they even have the amount of people necessary to even go through this and find the stuff that might be able to prevent an attack? Or are they just getting so much other stuff that could then be used for really more nefarious purposes? I don't know. I mean, it's a tough balancing act. I don't have the right answer for that. Fortunately, I don't have to make those sorts of calls. But I'm not utterly convinced that it's been warranted. I wish that I had more trust in our government that it was warranted, but I just genuinely don't have it.
And on a serious note, just to piggyback off that, when someone wants to do something wrong and they know that you're watching everything that they do digitally, they go hand to hand. They talk to a person. They put them on a plane. So you telling me that you're in my life and everything that you're doing, that guy walked into a church and killed 9 people, and his friend said, oh, I thought he was going to do something like this. He should have gone. But nobody knew because he was one man on an island talking amongst his friends. He wasn't posting stuff or doing anything crazy where it could have been caught. So you telling me and telling the whole world, we're listening to everything you say, makes them go, all right, we're face-to-face now. We're hand-to-hand. You're going to do this and do that. So, I mean,
yeah, they're the listening to the people who are not sophisticated terrorists.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
The sophisticated terrorists are doing direct encrypted communications.
It's supposed to make you feel better at the same time, but it really doesn't, because if somebody wants to, locks are for honest people. I don't lock my door. I have a pit bull. I got a gun. You want to come to my house? Feel free. Because if you're going to get in, you're going to break the door in anyway. People are going to find a way to do what they want to do. You just have to prepare yourself the best way you can. And this seems to make people feel better. At the same time, because a lot of people I know say, oh, the privacy doesn't matter. And I'm like, okay.
I do think that they're probably going to catch these dopey lone wolf terrorists who are really stupid, you know, Americans or, you know, people in London who are disenfranchised and they're 17 or 18 or 19 years old and they're on some stupid message board, you know, disgruntled because they can't find a job or whatever, or they're mentally ill. You probably do catch some of those lone wolves, but you're not catching the legit terrorists.
I think that, you know, a good intelligence service doesn't rely on just mass surveillance in the way that that you would want to. I mean, I think you have to be able to have great sources and be able to infiltrate and, and be able to track things. Like I said, I have no problem with if there is, you know, people that have been identified as a risk, being able to, and that, you know, being able to get a court order to say
at least somebody could justify, answer to it, right? Somebody could explain
to
their
decision. This is justifiable. Right. But if not, I think that like that we have to, you know, have a balance in what we give up. And I think that preserving a lot of the basic, you know, Fourth Amendment rights and things like that are really, really important long term for us as a society.
So disappointing that, you know, Obama was elected and you thought he was going to be the guy who would, you know, get rid of Guantanamo, you know, and maybe dismantle some of this security state. And he did the exact opposite.
You know, I was just listening to a great podcast with Dan Carlin, who does Hardcore History.
Yeah, of course.
And Sam Harris.
Yeah, of course.
And they talked about this very issue. Why did Obama seem to transform when he got into office? And their sort of idea was that that what happens is you get that daily intelligence briefing.
Yeah, the one that Bush didn't read.
But apparently Obama does read it.
Yes.
And basically,
Osama bin Laden determined to strike the U.S. Yeah. 30 days later.
And something happened. Yeah. So, and I think that is basically a list every day you get of all the people who want to, like, you know, do something really bad.
Right. And you're just scared to death.
Well, and I think that it makes you, it puts you on a more defensive posture. I'm not saying it means that we should be eroding a lot of our basic civil liberties, but I can certainly understand.
He's making that calculation of, I am going to be responsible of one of two things: people being upset, the privacy freaks being upset about my privacy, the privacy issue, which is maybe 10% of the country, or another terrorist attack, God forbid another 9/11. 100% of the country is going to blame me.
Yeah,
Doctor, you were going to say.
At the same time, you can't give the president of the United States all that power, because even things that he wants to get done has to go through a system.
Yeah.
And sometimes that system is against you. So again, he can say whatever he wants, but there are checks and balances, and those checks and balances are getting paid by lobbyists that need X, Y, and Z. And so he sits there like, okay, well, I can shut down Guantanamo Bay, or I can push through Obamacare and shove it down people's throat. Well, I want people to have health care because they're never going to give up the war. Like, there's games, and there's so much BS in politics that thinking Obama's going to do something is a joke, because he is a very puppeteer type person where he's got only a few strings that he can actually pull and get something done because
it's
his moving body.
Interesting comment in the chat room. Omega Project says perhaps Ted Kaczynski, the bomber.
Unabomber.
The Unabomber was not so far off base. I mean, if you look at that manifesto, somebody took quotes from that manifesto and put them up against like Bill Gates or other people, which, you know, kind of offensive, but he did have, as some crazy, highly intelligent people do, had some points about the eroding nature of human freedoms and whatnot.
He was, well, yeah, I mean, I think that
a madman, of course.
You know,
he was a genius. He was just crazy. Insane, but he's very, very smart.
The reason why we put these structures and these limits on power is not for when we have, you know, good, wise leaders. It's for the inevitability that sooner or later we have really corrupt. Yeah.
This is a family program. Yeah.
Not even necessarily corrupt, but
you just say ish. Ish is the new way.
You know, incompetent or low quality
or
leadership.
Or Palpatine.
Yeah. So the reason that you put these structures in place is so that maybe it's like the stuff with like the drones, right?
Yeah.
It's like maybe you trust Obama to make the right decisions about how we use drones, but the thing is, we should have limits. We should put limits in place now over how they're used, because sooner or later we're going to have somebody.
You're going to have the emperor.
You're going to have somebody that maybe we disagree with.
Yeah, and it's going to be like, oh, well, I can use drones to strike in America.
Yeah,
like we're killing Americans with drones outside the United States.
Yeah,
and that seems like, did we really just kill an American? Well, he's a terrorist and he's a member of ISIS. Okay, yeah,
it becomes a slippery slope. So better
but
to
are
put
we going
to those
kill the Americans with drones in America? How would you feel about that? American gets killed.
I think that we'd have a real. I think that I would have a problem with that. You have to have due process, right, to kill an American, I think.
Okay, but what if knew it was the bombers from Boston? We knew they were in a location, and we just said, "F it. We'll send a drone in to get them, so nobody has to risk their life." You're against that.
I think that we should try to do. I think first of all, I think that a lot of cases that are terrorists, especially in the U.S., are really, they should be treated like crimes, right? Like, we they should be prosecuted.
Due process.
You know, there should be due process. And I think the reason...
A court trial.
Well, and the reason that we do that is is because, again, it becomes a slippery slope, and eventually you have someone that you don't trust to make those decisions, and you want them to
be
constrained.
We decided to not be in a dictatorship.
Yeah.
It was a good choice. Considering this is July 4th weekend.
Yeah.
Pretty good choice so far.
Even with all that common sense, we still got the guy in Colorado waiting for trial that shot up the movie theater, like, because they just don't know what to do, whether to execute the person. Like, politics is so much of a game anymore. Like, all things that are great and common sense and the way things should work, like, hey, let's put checks and balances in so nothing bad goes wrong when something crazy comes in. But if a reasonable person comes in, we should listen to that person. If only things work that way. And it doesn't anymore. It's all about money and lobbyists and fun stuff.
All right. This has been an amazing episode of This Week in Tech. Thank you so much to Leo Laporte for allowing me to host for him. I hope he enjoyed his time off. Let me thank and give plugs. Give thanks and plugs in the name of the Lord. Which he'll giveth the plugs now. O doctor, what pluggeth hast thou to bestow upon us, O doctor? Tell us thy plugs.
IQMZ.com.
IQMZ.com. What is that?
I'm building something, and when it gets launched, I'll tell people that want to know about it.
Okay. Very mysterious.
Yes, super mysterious.
Can you sign up with an email address there?
Yeah, incognito. Just go ahead and put your name and email in there, and I'll get back to you when I get ready to push a button and launch the dang gun.
All right, the always hilarious and mysterious O-Doctor Owen J.J. Stone, IQMZ.com, IQMZ.com, and follow him at O-Doctor. Of course, spelled correctly, O-H-D-O-C-T-A-H. Oh, doctor. Thank you for coming on the program. Christina Warren, what plugs mayeth you bestow upon us? At film_girl, we know that.
I'm at film_girl. Yeah, you can find my work at Mashable. But I also, I co-host a podcast called Rocket, which is an accelerated geek conversation that I do with two of my female friends. So it's kind of a more female-centric take on tech, but where it's not like you don't have to be a woman to enjoy the show, I don't think. It's called Rocket. It's at relay.fm, and it's a good show.
Everybody check out Rocket. I'm assuming it is in the iTunes podcasting store.
It is. So search for Rocket in iTunes.
It's very simple. You go to menu, content,
exactly.
Spoken word, podcasts, female, tech, Rocket.
Yep.
And you'll find it there. You'll find it there. All right. Everybody, thank you again, Christina Warren. Everybody, go check out Mashable, and film_girl, of course, is her Twitter handle. Peter Rojas, some plugs for you.
You know, actually, I also do a podcast.
Oh, it's going around. Okay,
I completely forgot.
And we're also going to go to the live studio audience, so you can each plug your podcast as well.
Exactly. It's if you don't have a podcast,
I do the Toast Cast. We every week specialize in different types of toast.
Pop and some toast.
Absolutely.
I do a podcast with Ryan Block, who was my co-founder at Gadget. I used to do Engadget with him.
Yep.
And we do.
We can call him a co-founder of Engadget.
He's a co-founder
of Engadget.
And it's called MVP.
MVP.
Most valuable product. Can we talk about new tech products?
Viable product. Most valuable.
I wanted to call it Minimum Viable Podcast, but somebody already took that name.
Genius. All the puns are taken.
Yeah, I know.
So it's basically podcasting names have become like domain names. Everything's taken.
Yeah, everything's taken.
Everything's taken. So, you got to just keep guessing. What will people hear on MVP?
So we talk about, we're very product focused, so we don't talk necessarily about like business news or just general tech news, but we try to identify the 3 or 4 new products announced that week that we're find interesting or really excited about.
Awesome. And let me, of course, thank our sponsors. Wealthfront, thank you. What an amazing product. Go to wealthfront.com/twit. And Casper. Oh, we all saw Leo rolling around just on that luxurious mattress. And you can get $50 off at casper.com/twit. Use the promo code twit, of course. And Squarespace. Oh, Squarespace. Squarespace. Responsive sites. Peter and I both use Squarespace. Use the promo code twit. And Prosper, if you need a loan. Or, you know, they didn't really in the ad go into, if you have a little bit of cheddar and you want to put it to work, you can actually give money to people who want loans and you can beat the stock market by a significant percentage. Go ahead and check out prosper.com/twit and receive a $50 prepaid Visa card when you get a loan. Thanks to everybody here in the studio for coming out. And thanks to Tanya and John and everybody else who did the program, all the techs here on the ones and the twos. Appreciate it. And we'll see you all next time on This Week in Tech. All right.